every Thursday, joined by the Federal Immigration Minister, Peter Dutton. He's on the line. Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Ray. How are you?
Good, thank you. Yesterday, the counter-terrorism raids in Sydney targeted a number of people well-known to authorities. Of course, they told us the 15-year-old shooter, Farhad Khalil Mohammed Jabbar, wasn't on police radar. He's of Iraqi Kurdish background, originally came here with his family from Iran. Now, as Immigration Minister, do you then go ahead and investigate the circumstances of this family coming to Australia, or do we leave it to the courts?
No, automatically, Ray, our department swings into action, obviously provides whatever support's needed to the Australian Federal Police and to the New South Wales Police. We've had a look at the history, and I've asked my department to investigate all of the details, all of the applications that have been made. It appears that, as you say, family arrived in Australia, but the children may have come sometime after, and I'm having a look into the circumstances around their applications, all of those processes, and no doubt that'll be subject to the coronial investigations.
Well, given it says the family arrived here 15 years ago, but it says he wasn't born here, we can only assume that either mother or father came and a family reunion process was put in place. That's all we can assume.
Well, generally, for it's true for a lot of people who come by boat, for example, will come out ahead of the rest of the family, and then they'll try and reunite with the family here, and that does happen regularly. There's no question about that.
Now, suggestions today and yesterday that this 15-year-old didn't act alone. We seem to be going to the same houses in Western Sydney, detaining the same people. Some of them are in Supermax in Goulburn. Does the department investigate how these people came to be here, whether they're Australian-born, whether they've come here under various reunion policies, not just this, the murderer, but other people as well?
Yeah, right. And this is, this is a whole debate about this character cancellation test that we're running, the Section 501 cancellations, which has created a bit of heat in relation to some New Zealand citizens. But we do go through with the intelligence agencies, with the federal police, to have a look at individual cases, particularly where people are here on visas. There might be questionable circumstances about some of the information that they've provided, and we've set up a specific task force to go through and have a look at some of these high-profile cases, and we've spoken publicly about that, and I think it's a necessary thing for us to do, because if people are lying or providing false information about their applications, well, we need to deal with that.
The sister of the murderer travelled to Turkey 24 hours before the shooting. You've sought clarification from Turkish authorities. Have you had any luck in finding out where she is, whether she's in Syria, Iraq or Turkey?
Well, right, there'll be inquiries undertaken by, no doubt, the AFP, and my department will provide whatever assistance is needed through the immigration department, but I haven't seen any of that information.
Okay. Look, and I don't put you into this lot, but I notice the Premier of New South Wales is backing away from describing this as a politically motivated attack. Why were there so many people in government and even in the New South Wales Police who were at pains to describe it as politically motivated when obviously, given the young bloke was screaming Allahu Akbar as he was shooting down the street, that it was a religious attack, that it was by a Muslim on a non-Muslim? Why the reluctance by some people within your government to call it for what it was?
Well, right, people can answer for their own comments. My comment is that we have to call these things for what they are. If we want to have an honest relationship, whether it's with the Muslim community or with Buddhists or whoever it might be, we have to have an honest discussion. And the fact is that we have a significant problem, and we need to work with community leaders and people of influence within the Muslim community to deal with and to try and positively influence some of these people. And there's obviously a lot of work that the Attorney General does, that Michael Keenan as the Justice Minister does, to try and work with Australian communities, in particular in Sydney and Melbourne. But we need to recognise that a lot of these kids are being radicalised online over a couple of weeks, whether or not they're of a Muslim faith or another faith. We know that they are receiving this education, this indoctrination online, and many of them wouldn't have any idea about the values of Islam or about the values of Christianity or anything else. But the fact is, we have a significant problem, in particular with people in their teens. The age is getting younger and younger, it seems. And some of the advice is that it can take 2 or 3 weeks of internet indoctrination for these people to be able to be in a position to act, and we need to be realistic about that threat, and I think that police are dealing with it as best they can.
Now, we've got 12,000 Syrian refugees coming to this country, and that's been applauded by everyone. That was an action of the former Prime Minister Tony Abbott. The news yesterday is 7,000 of the 12,000 will be situated in Sydney. In fact, around the Liverpool region, where there apparently is a good number of Syrian refugees already, or Syrian immigrants. People are worried about it. When we discussed this, you and I, previously, we talked about marginalised Syrian groups, and that means Christian groups. People are concerned with the change of Prime Minister that maybe there'll be a move away from what was originally announced. Can you allay their fears?
Ray, I can. So the former Prime Minister, Mr Abbott, and I work closely, and Mr Turnbull and I are working closely on it now as well. The first point is we're not going to sacrifice the security and health checks that need to be undertaken to verify who people are, because we want to help those who are fleeing the sort of incidents that we saw in Sydney only a couple of days ago. I mean, the persecuted minorities, the Christians in particular, but others, have watched family members be beheaded, attacked and persecuted otherwise. So we want to help people who are the most in need, and we don't want people who are seeking to jump on the end of the queue or jump to the front of the queue who are Johnny-come-latelys and aren't Syrians or aren't in need of support. We're not interested in providing a safe haven to those people. We want to seek out the legitimate ones, and we are going to conduct the proper security checks, and I've been very specific to my department about making sure that we have the biometric checks undertaken. In some cases, there'll be DNA checks, and we will work with the United Nations, but conduct our own checks with our intelligence partners otherwise to make sure the people we're accepting within the 12,000 are going to be a positive addition to our community, which will be a good thing for our country and a good thing for them. So we'll work with New South Wales and Victoria and Northern Territory. Other state governments have expressed a will to try and provide support. What we don't want to do is create ghettos. We want to provide an opportunity to have services delivered to people, including English language, including training so that people can get jobs. We want to provide those services, and generally that means that you need to be somewhere close to a large city or a large regional centre where those services can be provided. So we don't want to marginalise people. We want people to be able to honour their past and recognise the fact that they have a rich history from where they were born, but you're an Australian citizen now, you abide by our laws, you adhere to Australian practices, and that's what we ask of anybody who comes to our country. And if that's the case, we find that things work out well, and that's what Australia's been built on.
I don't know if you caught up with the story last night on A Current Affair. I happened to be watching. It's about overstayers being put up at the Adena Hotel in Brisbane, which has magnificent water views. It's a four-star establishment. These are people waiting to be deported back. There was an Englishman on there last night, quite happy to talk to the reporter from A Current Affair. But I'm wondering why they're staying in this glamorous hotel in Brisbane, overlooking the Brisbane River and the Story Bridge, as opposed to a more appropriate facility that wouldn't cost the taxpayer as much money. This bloke spoke about three people being in the room, being watched by three guards. I imagine they're Serco guards, before they're actually put on a plane. And this could be weeks, or in some cases, many, many weeks, staying in this luxury accommodation. Are you aware of all of this?
Ray, I have. I've received some information overnight. So, look, the department's approach is that they'll seek out cheap accommodation options. In some cases, it'll depend on what's available. And if they've got no room at the immigration detention centre at the airport or at one of the facilities close by, then they will look for this sort of accommodation. There'll be multiple people, as you say, that are accommodated in one room. They'll have guards there, and they'll be awaiting deportation. So it's not a prolonged arrangement, and it should be a last resort that they end up in.
Well, I can help you, because I go to Brisbane quite regularly to call the football and also to appear on 4BC. And when I go up there, I stay at one or two places. One's relatively expensive, and that's in Charlotte Street, a block of apartments. But I stay at a beautiful hotel complex out near the studios at Cannon Hill. And it's very affordable and a lot less than the place in Brisbane or the Adena apartments. A lot less. And I reject, Minister, that your department is looking for cheaper options. The Adena Hotel is a beautiful hotel overlooking the Brisbane River. There are much cheaper accommodation packages in Brisbane for overstayers than that one. I can give you a tip.
Well, Ray, we'll see if we can get the room next door to you next time.
Happy to give you the name of the place we stay at. They serve a nice pub meal downstairs. There's no room service. There's no pool, but it's affordable and clean.
If they've made a mistake here, Ray, it's not to be repeated. And they will seek out cheap accommodation options, and that is the direction they've been given.
Look, I wanted to talk to you briefly and finish it here about a story I've raised with you previously. It's about a woman who's now in detention, I think in Darwin, awaiting deportation to New Zealand, and you raised this just earlier in the interview. There was an article in the Sunshine Coast Daily about this woman, Angela Russell, and it typified that she's being deported for shoplifting. She's actually been in jail 5 times. She has an extensive criminal record and a record of drug abuse. In fact, the family court, as I understand it, has given custody of a child to her husband or partner, as the case may be. It's been suggested that Angela Russell needs to stay here because of her children. She doesn't have custody of that 4-year-old, and her 16-year-old daughter has chosen not to live with her. How do these people con journalists and the like, even at the Sunshine Coast Daily? They're deserving of support.
Well, Ray, let me give your listeners a bit of detail about Miss Russell, and then people can make their own judgments. Just a reminder about this program. So the Immigration Minister on this role at the moment, we have the ability to go through and cancel people's visas. So we're not talking about Australian citizens, but if they've done the wrong thing, they've been involved in criminal activity, they can have their visa cancelled and sent back to their country of origin. Now, Miss Russell arrived in Australia from 2002... and this is publicly available, but I'm sick of just hearing one side of the story from some of these journalists who are rushing out there to pretend that they're the victim, that they're the friend of the offender, and to forget all about the victim. This is what the history reads like. So from 2002, conviction for stealing, for assault, for possession of dangerous drug, to enter a dwelling and commit an indictable offence, attempted fraud and commit indictable offence, attempted fraud, dishonestly gain a benefit or advantage, willful damage, assault, or obstruct police. Most recently, in January of this year, she was in prison for 9 months. In 2008, she was in prison for 18 months for entering a dwelling with intent by breaking in at night, using threats of violence whilst armed and in company. She was warned by my department in April of 2014 that if there were any further offences committed, she would have her visa cancelled. There was a conviction in January of this year, so after the warning had been issued, and this woman was convicted on 5 stealing charges and imprisoned for 9 months. I think she's had more than a fair go, and I think most Australians would say that if you're here on a visa, you're expected to abide by Australian law. If you break the law, you go back to your country where you came from, and that's exactly what we're doing in this situation. And if people believe that somehow I'm going to backflip or bend in relation to these cases, they have got it completely wrong, mate. We need to make sure that we keep our society safe, our borders secure. That's exactly what we're doing. And I'm going to find more of these cases. And if people want to put out one side of the story, I'll put out the other side. And reasonable people can make their judgments about whether she's been given a fair go or indeed too much of a fair go. And that's the decision that's been made, and that's what will happen.
Well, maybe we'd send the audio of this interview and what you've just said over the last 2 or 3 minutes to Julie Bishop and to the New Zealand Prime Minister, who were wringing their hands about how unfairly this woman had been treated.
Well, Ray, I just think we need to rely on the facts, and I think the facts in this case speak for themselves.
Okay, we'll talk next week. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Ray. Take care.
Immigration Minister Peter Dutton online as he is every Thursday.